Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're looking at how to build a really strong foundation for life, especially if you're facing challenges or maybe trying to change some longstanding habits. We're doing a deep dive into chapter 4 of the RAFT workbook. It's called The 5 Gifts, the Original Harm Reduction Program. The RAFT itself in the workbook, it's like your personal vessel, for getting through life's rough patches and finding, well, freedom from suffering. So the idea today is to see how some really ancient wisdom offers these incredibly practical universal guidelines for, you know, living a better life. It really focuses on setting up what the workbook calls a commitment to harmlessness. These are the sort of foundational planks for our raft. There's a great quote from Samuel Johnson: "The chains of habit are too light to be felt until they're too heavy to be broken." It sets the scene perfectly, I think.
It really does. And, you know, the RAFT workbook makes a point that creating a life worth living isn't just about stopping the destructive stuff. It's more about actively building something new, something solid, something that really supports a more authentic way of being. And that's exactly what these 5 gifts help us do.
Okay, so let's unpack that. The RAFT workbook brings up these 5 precepts and calls them an original harm reduction program. That's a really interesting take on something so old.
It is, yeah. And the workbook stresses this isn't about rigid rules you just have to follow. It's more about developing an awareness of how your actions, your words, even your thoughts, how they affect you and others, and then consciously choosing, you know, to minimize the harm.
Making sure the foundation of your RAFT to freedom is sound, ready for the journey ahead.
Exactly.
And the workbook uses that raft metaphor quite a bit, doesn't it? If the basic planks are wet, well, it doesn't matter what else you add, your boat's going to leak. So committing to harmlessness in the spirit of these precepts, make sure you're building a watertight raft.
That's the core strength.
Yeah.
And what's really fascinating is how universal these guidelines actually are. You know, Gautama's 5 precepts, Gautama being the historical Buddha, they aren't just Buddhist. They seem to reflect this timeless sort of cross-cultural understanding of how we can live together more peacefully, how we can all flourish.
Right. And the RAFT workbook gives some amazing historical backup for this. It shows this ethical conduct idea is really ancient, really widely understood.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you look back at the Ur-Nammu Code from Mesopotamia, maybe 2100 BCE. That's like 1500 years before Gautama. And it already had laws against things like homicide, injury, theft, adultery, lying at her oath, all the big ones.
Wow.
And then later you get the Hammurabi Code around 1750 BCE, adding more about public order and social harmony.
So given these ancient laws already existed, what was really different or maybe profound about Gautama's approach? It sounds like he was building on existing ideas about social order, not totally reinventing the wheel.
That's a really key point. Those older codes were mostly about external rules, punishments, keeping society in line, you know. Gautama's genius was reframing these same principles in a deeply personal way. He presented them as gifts. Personal gifts.
Gifts. That changes everything, doesn't it? The RAFT workbook even quotes him emphasizing how pure and ancient these are. Let me find it.
Yeah.
These 5 gifts, original, long-standing, traditional, ancient, unadulterated from the beginning, that are not open to suspicion, will never be open to suspicion, and are unfaulted by knowledgeable contemplatives and Brahmins. But why gifts? What does that actually mean for someone trying to navigate their life?
It's such a powerful shift in perspective. The workbook explains it like this. When you sincerely take on these precepts, you're offering fearlessness and harmlessness unconditionally to all beings, including ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're making this incredibly freeing statement, both outwards and inwards. You have nothing to fear from me.
Wow. You have nothing to fear from me. That completely reframes it. It's not about what you can't do. It's about what you are offering. A gift of peace, basically.
Exactly that. And doing this, it helps build trust. Safety, connection. These are things that often get really damaged by past destructive compulsions or behaviors. So choosing to offer these gifts, it becomes this act of, well, profound kindness, generosity. And that's so vital for healing, for moving forward on that journey from suffering towards freedom.
Okay, so thinking of them as personal intentions or maybe training guidelines, not strict commandments. That feels like a really important distinction for anyone trying to change deep habits.
Oh, it's crucial. The workbook is really clear on this. The path away from suffering towards freedom, it's a learning process. It involves growth. And let's face it, we're all human. We're imperfect. So this framing, it encourages self-compassion. It encourages you to just renew your commitment if you slip up, rather than, you know, falling back into old harmful patterns because you feel ashamed about breaking some rigid rule.
That makes total sense. It's about setting a direction, a compassionate one. Maybe we could walk through each of the 5 as presented in the RAFT workbook. And as you listen, maybe think about which one feels most relevant or perhaps most challenging for you right now.
Good idea.
Okay, the first one. I set the intention not to harm myself or others by my thoughts, by my words, or by my actions. This is basically harmlessness, refraining from killing, obviously, but also intentionally causing physical or, importantly, deep emotional harm. It feels like the bedrock, building safety.
Mm-hmm. Foundational.
Second, I set the intention not to take anything that has not been freely given. This is about trustworthiness, respecting property, respecting boundaries, building integrity.
Yeah, that sense of basic fairness and respect.
Third, I set the intention not to harm myself or others by my sexual and sensual misconduct. So, sexual responsibility. Avoiding actions that cause harm, like exploitation, adultery, breaking trust.
Cultivating respect and care in that really sensitive area of life. Dismantling old patterns where maybe trust was broken or people were objectified.
Fourth, I set the intention not to harm myself or others by false speech, harsh speech, gossip, and slander. Truthfulness and kind speech. Promoting clear communication, real connection.
And it's not just about not telling outright lies, is it? It's about the quality of communication. Does it connect or divide? Does it clarify or confuse?
Exactly. And then the fifth one, I set the intention to refrain from taking alcohol and other drugs that impair my mindfulness. The workbook really flags this one as especially important on this journey from suffering to freedom.
Yes, it does. And it's not framed as a moral failing, but as a practical one for this particular path.
Why is it singled out like that?
Well, because intoxication directly clouds the very awareness, the mindfulness that you need to navigate effectively. It's your compass on the raft. Mm. If your mind is clouded, it's much harder to be aware of your impact, to make conscious choices, to uphold the other intentions, really. It undermines your ability to steer.
Right. So it makes it harder to actually practice the other four gifts, essentially.
Precisely. It weakens your capacity for conscious, intentional action.
So if you're setting these intentions proactively, you're essentially doing less harm in the first place, which means less future guilt, less need for forgiveness, maybe. It sounds like preventative medicine.
That's a great way to put it. The workbook calls it preventative medicine for the heart and relationships. It really is. It's a fundamental way you practice kindness, both outwards and inwards. You're offering safety to others, but you're also building deep self-respect within yourself. By choosing not to cause harm, you're actively chipping away at the roots of future guilt and regret. And that creates this immediate psychological lightness. It's about starting to build a life that you don't feel you need to escape from.
And it's amazing how these ancient ideas seem to connect so well with, well, modern thinking, psychology, and neuroscience. Can you expand on that? The RAFT workbook touches on these connections.
Oh, definitely. From a psychology standpoint, it's pretty clear now. When your actions align up with your values like non-harming, you feel better mentally. You reduce that internal conflict, that cognitive dissonance, the guilt, the shame, and instead you build genuine self-esteem. Plus, pro-social behavior, you know, acting in ways that help others, is consistently linked to happiness and stronger social bonds. It's about rebuilding personal integrity, which is such a key task when moving away from harmful compulsive behaviors. These intentions are direct supports for that.
And you mentioned neuroscience, so this actually might change our brains.
Well, the connections are complex, but yes. Neuroscience suggests that practices which strengthen empathy, compassion, impulse control, all things related to these intentions, can literally strengthen specific brain circuits. Think of areas like the prefrontal cortex, your brain's CEO for decision-making and self-regulation. By consistently choosing non-harming actions, you're essentially doing cognitive training. You're building stronger pathways, making it gradually easier to act in line with your values rather than just reacting automatically based on old habits or impulses.
Fascinating. And what about from a philosophy perspective?
Well, they align beautifully with core ethical principles that have been discussed for centuries. The idea of do no harm, non-maleficence, is central. They also resonate with virtue ethics, which is less about rules and more about cultivating good character traits like honesty, kindness, responsibility. And they offer a really practical path towards what Aristotle called eudaimonia, a flourishing life. It's hard to flourish, to find inner peace and social harmony if you're constantly tangled up in causing harm.
And then circling back to those ancient law codes we talked about earlier, Oranamu, Hammurabi.
Right. Those parallels really drive home how timeless and universal these ethical concerns truly are. It shows that societies, way back, understood that managing behavior around violence, property, sex, speech, it's fundamental for living together. These intentions tap right into that deep, shared wisdom about what prevents suffering and what allows communities and individuals to thrive. They really are the essential planks for any raft heading towards safety and freedom.
What seems really striking is the immediate relief or freedom that can come from just setting these intentions sincerely. The RIT workbook notes, many people discover that by abandoning the use of intoxicants and other harmful compulsive behaviors, the vast majority of their turmoil settles.
Absolutely. And that settling isn't trivial. It creates this immediate freedom for the individual. Freedom from conflict. Freedom from blame, guilt, shame. Freedom from agitation, discomfort, regret. Even freedom from things like debt or hangovers, often linked to those behaviors. It's a huge weight lifted.
That's a powerful list. Freedom from all those burdens. It sounds almost liberatingly simple. Maybe simple isn't the right word, but profound.
It is profound. And it's not just about external problems disappearing. It creates an internal spaciousness. That's the key.
And the space created by that freedom.
Mm-hmm.
What happens then? The workbook says it can be filled with more helpful possibilities and with contentment.
That's the beautiful part. When you're not constantly putting out fires you started yourself or dealing with a fallout from harmful actions, you reclaim so much energy. It's like cleaning out a really cluttered room. Suddenly there's space. Space for creativity, for genuine connection, for noticing simple joys. That quiet space allows real contentment to emerge.
So wrapping this up, these five precepts, when we see them as personal intentions, as these gifts of harmlessness, they form the ethical bedrock for our RAFT to freedom.
They really are the sturdy planks you build upon, yes.
By committing to minimizing harm in thought, word, and deed around taking what's not given, sexual responsibility, speech, and clear-mindedness, you build safety. You cultivate self-respect. You simplify your life, really, and establish the stability you need for any deeper inner work.
And it's crucial to remember, this commitment isn't about suddenly becoming perfect overnight. It's about setting a clear direction. A compassionate direction, a conscious choice to align how you live with your deep wish to be free from suffering.
So maybe take a moment now or later to reflect using some prompts from the RAFT workbook.
Yeah.
Like, how does seeing these as gifts you offer rather than rules imposed on you change how you feel about them? Which of these five gifts feels most alive for you right now? Maybe the most challenging or the most relevant?
Yeah, and perhaps consider how your relationship with substances, if that's relevant, has maybe impacted your ability to uphold the other commitments, your clarity of mind.
And just thinking about, you know, how could adopting these intentions genuinely support your emotional well-being, your sense of personal integrity?
Just hold these intentions sincerely as you navigate your journey. They really are powerful allies. They help us see our shared humanity, the ways we all cause and experience suffering, and the ways we can choose differently. There's a wonderful quote from Sylvia Boorstein. I like to think of ethics as a kindness practice. Every time I refrain from causing harm, I'm giving peace to the people around me.
That's lovely, a kindness practice.
And Sharon Salzberg adds, we do good because it frees the heart. It opens us to a wellspring of happiness. It's not just about restriction, it's about liberation.